And I have the pleasure of introducing Zach Wells, whose first book, Unsettled, is with Insomniac Press, and who also has here a chapbook entitled Ludicrous Parole. Zach, has anybody ever commented on Unsettled coming out with Insomniac?
No, actually.
I first read Zach Wells' poetry when he sent me a bunch of poems for the New Quarterly, which I guest edited last summer, and I accepted them by return mail, all six, as I recall. A wonderful poet and critic, and he is from PEI, lives now in Halifax, and is on tour across Canada with Unsettled, right?
Yes.
Zach.
It is a cross-country tour, and I am not a man of great means, and so I have some thanks to give to some organizations and people who have made the tour possible. I owe a debt to the Nova Scotia Government Department of Tourism, Culture, and Heritage, I believe it in that order, who have provided me a grant to cover my transportation expenses. And to my employers via rail, both for laying me off to give me the time to travel across the country and for providing sleeping accommodations on the train, which make the trip a great deal more comfortable. Before I read from Unsettled, I'm going to read some books from my very new chapbook, published by Montreal's own Mercutio Press, courtesy of Mr. Ben Kalman. This is a book of poems that are centered around the idea of speech, ventriloquy, soliloquy, and address. And I'm going to read a couple of short pieces from it. The first one falls more under ventriloquy than anything else, and it's an appropriate poem to read in Montreal because it's a version of a poem by the French-Canadian poet Émile Nelligan. Nelligan's poem was titled Clair de Lune Intellectuelle. It's a rondel or rondo. I can never keep the two forms straight. It has a very intricate pattern of refrains and rhymes that I've reproduced, but in order to reproduce it and keep it somewhat fresh and modern, I've played a lot, as Jeff did, with images, translating images as well as words. So the new poem is far from a literal translation, it's very true to form. Mental moonshine. My brain case is prinked with pinpricks of stars and stinks of the fetid toes of the dead. My brain flower blows its little green head, bloodied bull dips horns to carve scars in the dirt. In a humming ditch, les soirs doux have died slowly, plashing and red. My brain case is prinked with pinpricks of stars and stinks of the fetid toes of the dead. My brain, a train of vagabond boxcars, discharges its gold-plated freight of lead bars, chugs from the barrens, deadheads it to cloud-locked Valhallas of stars. My brain case floods with the light of dead stars. The second poem is a poem in the voice of an exterminator who has grown rather fond of that which he kills. The Exterminator's Song to the Silverfish. Oh, my primitive slithers of silver, fine slivers of shine steel struck by sunlight and scattered, schools of herring-skinned swimmers, pardon me that I come singing with traps, gases, and powders. Oh, my ascetic lapisma, glue-chewing book-breakers, pardon my service to these quivering, wretched flesh masses who retch and shiver and spin from your scaled, bristle-tailed beauty. Pardon my demon and sign-off genocides, Argentina. I am forged from weak flesh, and your every gray death clinks a fresh minted coin in my pocket. I wasn't planning to read this poem, but Susan Gillis, before the reading at supper, asked me to read something new, and this is pretty new. It's a corona of sonnets, seven sonnets linked by last and first line coming round to link with the last line of the seventh sonnet is the same as the first line of the first sonnet. And it's a poem I wrote during and following the big blizzard that we had in Halifax a couple of years ago. It was dubbed White Juan because it happened a few months after Hurricane Juan hit the city. And it was just a monumental blizzard that shut the whole city down for several days. It's Corona after the blizzard. Staring out at the empty parking lot, buried, I can't but be tempted to think. Blank page, clotted cream, white sheet without blood, blot of blood upon it. That won't do. I shrink from clean metaphor. One block down, I know the suburb's urgent traffic crawls and clogs this coast town's constricted veins. Greasy snow humped gray in trenches, slush crummy cogs grinding in a seized economy's engine. The liquor store enjoys a roaring trade. Socked in folk stock up needful stuff again, unimpressed by this trick that winter's played. In curfew dark, the amber beacon of a plow strobes the first flakes of another night's snow. Strobes. The furred flakes of another night's snow garnish meter deep heaps that are being shoved, shoveled, lugged, bypassed, cussed at, and blown all over Halifax. Dogs are peeing in it. Dump trucks haul enormous sullied dollops dockwards to nourish the harbor. Dispensation's been granted to muddy our common latrine. Over my neighbor's fence, I launch blocks that I've carved from the drifts, shirking the work of a far longer trek. And pay for this lazy sin. Fine stuff sifts, settles wet on the white skin of my neck. Shoulders squinched, I focus up through a squint. Crows quarter five-fingered wings against wind. Crows quarter five-fingered wings against wind and dip and wheel and rip and skate like kites without strings, shear at each other, break, bend off a feather from wrecking their dogfights. Some claim that brute beasts have no sense of fun. That's dumb. A few make the most of unplanned time off, don snowshoes and skis, sled and run through ultra-urbane winter wonderland. Others maunder in gloom, cursing profit loss, crunching the cost of this weather bomb. And one bone-weary poet pens sonnets to celebrate an exceptional storm. Image sick, he seeks moral straws to clutch at. Yes, most of what is done is too much. What? Yes, most of what is done is too much. God, when there are so many things not begun. Rosebuds to gather, pied beauties to touch with eyes, ears, nose, teeth, toes, fingers, and tongue. Strange lands to visit and spices to taste. Heights still unfathomed, depths yet to be climbed, blank pages to fill, red lips to be kissed, beds and books unbroken, words left unrhymed. Why do we persist in boring ourselves? When life's a great multifarious feast, why do we storehouse canned goods on our shelves? How to account for such thrift-conscious waste? When life's 100,000 times too short, why do we settle for scrap, shred, crumb, ort? Weather settles. Hoary scraps, shreds, crumbs, orts of crumbly snow turned concrete in the cold, and salt-pocked hardpacks sparkle like flawed borts strewn in walkways carved in spall-etched, frost-walled Maginot trenches, treacherous goat-path networks navigable to the nimble alone. Works halted as though the Sabbath compelled it. The fittest now must stumble clumsy while the housebound haunt bay windows, waiting on Zephyr's tepid breath to melt impediments, in fear of glissandos into broken coccyx, hip, elbow, dealt by glib ice on asphalt. A mean, hard card and shortcut to a frost-hummock boneyard. A shortcut through the frost-hummocked boneyard should have brought the drunk poet home sooner, but for footprints and foxholes, our stone bard made unsteady progress. Was it moon or streetlight that dusted the scene so ghastly? Or was it that last half-pint of cider that limned a blanched tableau like some lost Lee Poe poem? He broke like a Dave Steeves slider, or like the sun rising through the wrought east gate of the dead's condominium. And there, a loader bold elegant on fraught greased axles, scooping buckets of crud. Stand there was all he'd manage, transfixed by the diesel dance, and the driver like Munch at his easel. I dance and shiver like Munch at his easel, straining to expel this Norwegian cold from fingers and toes. Our heat has fizzled out, our furnace drained of fuel. The old school molded space heaters radiate nothing. Ironclad hibernation. Studious cavern. Chilblained bum, I layer clothing. My neighbor's chimney pot spouts sooty O's. Oh, I covet fossil-fired comfort and curse my landlord's neglect. That fucker will rue forgetting to top up the tank. Of course, I'm sheer bluff. Bowser truck will be here soon. And wait, I wander and get lost in thought, staring out at the empty parking lot. Now I'll read a few poems from the book. This is a book of poems that were written during and shortly after my 7 years of itinerant labor in the Eastern Arctic. I worked for an airline loading planes, and later, once I acquired enough experience and seniority, supervising loading of planes. The first 5 of those years were spent in Iqaluit, and the work was long and hard and often cold, and the labor conditions weren't always the best, and it engendered frustration from time to time, and one sought sources of release. And we were lucky enough to operate these terrific 16-ton diesel forklifts. And this is forklift operator wanted, recreational facilities provided. At odd intervals, when it's all once again come to be too much, the cold, endless dark hours, the neglect, the fuck-ups, and I am at the humming hydraulics of a 16-ton jouncing hooer of a truck, keeping her reined with steady, sure-handed turns round untold millions of dollars in planes. A lunatic flash on the verge of nervous crash, that diesel-burning urge to plow full tilt through a thin tin skin of a Boeing or Hawker, just to see once how deep her steel forks would sink. Management must have guessed this. Must have planned it when the 48 overshot the strip last month and they hauled its scrapped hull back to the ramp for me to punch holes in. Part of my job in Iqaluit was going on planes as a loadmaster from Iqaluit to the outlying communities on Baffin Island. And normally what we do is we'd haul in a big load of freight, 5 tons worth of food and other necessary provisions, and we'd return pretty much empty. But every now and then, in certain communities, you come back with an interesting load. Cape Dorset, we'd haul a lot of stone carvings for shipment south to the markets in Ottawa and Montreal. And Pangnirtung had a big fish factory, and we'd ship a lot of turbot out of there. But in Pang also one time, I was working and we brought in a load of bowhead whale blubber because the bowhead whale, also known as the Greenland right, although it is an endangered species, there is a legislated hunt, ritual hunt done every couple of years in Pangnirtung where they're allowed to kill one whale. This is bowhead. I can hardly stand the rot our cargo wafts, the redolent fat of a Greenland right. This year's legal cull of ancient rights cross-stacked aft of me in plastic-strapped wax boxes, despite which snappy package, stench of mucktaw drenches this hawker, as it did holds of Victorian whalers. The same reek at 16,000 feet as 100 stripped krangs corrupting on Pond's Bay flows, London street lamps aglow and Oxford dawns dry neath baleen-ribbed brawlies. The same as it must have been and still is in this land that hoards scars and preserves what it kills, cached under stacked stones 1,000-odd years ago. This is a poem about springtime in Iqaluit and what turns up in the melt. White trash. Spring. And a Coke bottle's red wrapper flap-snaps synapses to time-lapse freezes of fisted petals, stamens, pistols, upthrusting thawed earth. Oh, but here meltwater nurtures a nullity. Dwindling snows expose no hocus-pocus crocus, but an archaeological hoax. 9 months of sodden limp trash, rejectamenta dispersed in blizzard-spaced layers like mauled Troy's ruin. In June, all the Inuit cons who've been country clubbing all winter will be handed hefty bags and litter spikes to restore civic decorum to this filthy capital, to give summer a clean slate and snow a decent home to settle again. In Iqaluit, all the employees of the airline, most of the employees of the airline, especially those hired from the south, were provided with accommodations in a kind of row housing. It was an interesting part of town. It was quite an eclectic mix of people in those houses, and our house had a big picture window in the living room, which faced the main hill in town. On top of which was the only high-rise building, which housed the government offices, one of the hotels, and the only public bar in town, the Tulugak Bar, known affectionately to locals as the Zoo. And in Iqaluit in the summertime, the sun only goes down for a couple of hours at night, very late, so at last call, you could watch from our picture window the drunks negotiating a path down that hill. This is Jack and Jill, having climbed the hill, come down again. Another shit-faced sauce beggars, slogs and staggers down the rough and tumble hard scrabble hill, barely picking a path, pursued poor beggar by a blotto-shrilled Jill, bleating a litany of all the ill he has ever construed, much less done, topping it off with a maraschino. You fucking drunk. Jack, for all his peccadilloes proud, upon reaching the top of the concrete steps, sways, surveys his realm, a pauper come king of the world, sloshed maestro conducting the sedge and the stone and the gravel-choked wire-strung choir of ravens, then stops, straight and cock stiff as if by a string stitched through the skin on his skull, and timbers. Toy soldier arms stuck stoic on hips, a slow-mo, rigorous fall that ends with a crack, a sticky brown flow from his crown, and Jill come a stumble in laughter. The last poem I'll read tonight sort of comes back around to the sort of things I'm doing in Ludicrous Parole. It's a poem, a soliloquy in the voice of a deteriorating iceberg. And I was disappointed to learn after the publication of my book that this wasn't an original conceit. Apparently, in Canadian literature, this goes as far back as Charles G.D. Roberts, who wrote a poem also in the voice of a deteriorating iceberg. My poem is called The Iceberg's Two Cents Worth Shortly Before Death. Roberts' poem is 264 lines long, so it's more like $200 worth. I won't keep you so long. This is The Iceberg's Two Cents Shortly Before Death. At last, after creeping what seemed like forever in a dead crawl from nowhen, I arrived, a syllable struck from the tip of time's tongue. Then was I calved rudely, spat out, delivered unto the deep, a word unheard in still boreal sleep. Now I'm an unpainted, unanchored buoy, adrift in the currents, more witness than warning, unfree. I've seen the fabled passage unstopped, an unlocked canal, open for business in pleasure and trade, banal. I've seen huge screens, blank and blacked in, all but obsolete, blocking the dark season's sun, felt my feet burn in a chemical bath, given rest to mutated migrating fowl. I've seen people hanging from full Windsor nooses, buried under modestly whitewashed crosses. I've steamed under violent, unblinking sun. I'm melting. I'm melting. I'm done. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you to Stephanie, Jeff, and Robin for coming to read with me, and to Chris for making it all possible. Buy some beer from him. Buy some books.